Our opening words for this morning are very timely ones, written by Howard Thurman. When the song of angels is stilled, when the star in the sky is gone, when the kings and the princes are home, when the shepherds are back with their flocks, the work of Christmas begins. To find the lost, to heal the broken, to feed the hungry, to release the prisoner, to rebuild the nations, to bring peace among brothers and sisters, to make music in the heart. You may have noticed that the order of service is somewhat different today. In the part that we normally had going deeper, we have actually three parts: our memory of ages past, our hope for years to come, and for the time being. So we'll begin by reading Robert Frost's poem, A Girl's Garden, which tells us about our memory of time past. A neighbor of mine in the village likes to tell how one spring, when she was a girl on the farm, she did a childlike thing. One day she asked her father to give her a garden plot to plant and tend and reap herself, and he said, "Why not?" In casting about for a corner, he thought of an idle bit of walled-off ground where a shop had stood, and he said, "Just it." And he said, "That ought to make you an ideal one-girl farm and give you a chance to put some strength on your Slim Jim arm." It was not enough of a garden, her father said, to plow, so she had to work it all by hand. But she don't mind now. She wheeled the dung in a wheelbarrow along a stretch of road, but she always ran away and left her not-nice load and hid from anyone passing. And then she begged the seed. She says she thinks she planted one of all things but weed. A hill each of potatoes, radishes, lettuce, peas, tomatoes, beets, beans, pumpkin, corn, and even fruit trees. And yes, she has long mistrusted that a cider apple tree in bearing there today is hers, or at least maybe. Her crop was a miscellany when all was said and done, a little bit of everything, a great deal of none. Now, when she sees in the village how village things go, just when it seems to come in right, she says, "I know. It's as when I was a farmer." Oh, never by way of advice. And she never sins by telling the tale to the same person twice. As the poet Rainer Maria Rilke puts it, "And now let us believe in the new year that is given us. New, untouched, full of things that have never been." So, on this first Sunday of the new year, I'd like to examine with you things that have been, things that may be, and things that are. Or we could say our past, our future, our present, or retrospect, prospect, and circumspect. First, our memories of time past. Our memories tend to be a bit like the crop in the girl's garden. Her crop was a miscellany when all was said and done, a little bit of everything and a great deal of none. I think of memory as a garden in which we have planted vegetables, hills of potatoes and radishes and peas and all the things mentioned in the poem. They're the healthy plants that we know we should consume every day, But they're annuals, and they need to be planted anew each year if we're to have a garden. They're like our short-term memory, which, as we all know, is the first to go. Now, what have I done with my keys? And my favorite, I just heard her name. Why can't I remember it? Ugh. We also have fruit trees in our garden of memory. These are relatively long-term enduring plants. These are like the things about us that seem to go on and on, traits that make us who and what we are. They're like our long-term memories, some of them from our childhood, deeply ingrained. But in our garden of memory, we also have weeds. We never planted them, but they're here anyway, and they threaten to choke out every other plant that we have nurtured so carefully. One such weed among our memories is the weed of regret. It spreads its roots and scatters its seed, and its fruit is bitterness itself. Regret can poison all the other good plants in our lives. The antidote to the poison of regret is forgiveness. When we regret, we bear the burden of painful memories, but when we forgive, the burden is lightened and sometimes lifted. Usually, the person hardest to forgive is our own self, when we know that we have let others down, when we have hurt even those whom we love, when we have been indifferent to others, when we don't live up to our standards. But the new year is a time for looking back at those regrets to acknowledge them, and for relieving ourselves of a burden on our spirits, so that we do not carry it with us into the new year. In the next few minutes of silence, a period of time that will not be long enough for some and much too long for others of you, I invite you to reflect on your regrets and then to forgive yourselves as much as you are able. Let go of the burden of regret. Leave it behind in the old year. Take time now in the silence. Let us follow this tone into the silence. And after the silence, music for lighting candles. And now our hope for years to come. Although the choir sang it beautifully, and I do not want to in any way imply that their diction wasn't perfect, I'd like to read you the poem also. The Road Not Taken by Robert Frost. Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and sorry I could not travel both and be one traveler. Long I stood and looked down one as far as I could until it bent in the undergrowth. Then took the other as just as fair, and having perhaps the better claim because it was grassy and wanted wear. Though as for that, the passing there had warned them really about the same. And both that morning equally lay in leaves no step had trodden black. Oh, I kept the first for another day, yet knowing how way leads on to way, I doubted if I should ever come back. I shall be telling this with a sigh, ages and ages hence. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, And that has made all the difference. The future. This is the time of year when we typically make resolutions, promises to ourselves about things we want to accomplish or change in the new year. So it's a very natural time for us to think into the future, to try to project what we think the future holds for us, and also what we would like it to hold. Now, it's tricky, this resolution business. On the one hand, we know that it is good management procedure to have some goals set up for ourselves so that we have some direction and know what we ought to be working toward. On the other hand, we know that often we tend to set up unreachable goals, and then we feel badly about ourselves when we don't meet them. Do I have any agreement here? But there's another way of looking at resolve, a constructive way that is within our means. To resolve can be to fix or settle on by deliberate choice or will. And that we can all do. The Frost poem that the singers sang gives us an example of that type of resolve. The poet knows that he is only one traveler, cannot pursue both paths. He must choose one. He has come to a decision point and then needs to act on the evidence available to him, incomplete as it is. That path or this one? Both paths were inviting, both were grassy and needed wear. Either of them would have been satisfactory. But life requires decisions. Decisions that affect our future more than our present. And how much more difficult it is to make decisions when all of the choices seem uninviting. We are faced with decisions, political, personal, economic, and congregational decisions. We cannot know what the future will bring, but we do know that we will need moral courage to make choices that will affect our future as a congregation, as a community, as a nation, and as a world. We come to divergences in the road all throughout our lives, and each occasion requires that we choose once again, almost always on the basis of incomplete data. May we have the moral courage to make the decisions that will enable us to have a future for us and for our children. May our hope for years to come be firmly grounded in our courage to choose. I have one short and one longer poem for you. The Pasture by Robert Frost. I'm going out to clean the pasture spring. I'll only stop to rake the leaves away and wait to watch the water clear, I may. I shan't be gone long. You come too. I'm going out to fetch the little calf that's standing by the mother. It's so young, it totters when she licks it with her tongue. I shan't be gone long. You come too. And an excerpt from a longer poem, titled For the Time Being by W.H. Auden. Well, so that is that. Now we must dismantle the tree, putting decorations back in their cardboard boxes. Some have gotten broken, and carrying them up to the attic. The holly and the mistletoe must be taken down and burnt, and the children got ready for school. There are enough leftovers to do, warmed up for the rest of the week. Not that we have much appetite, having drunk such a lot, stayed up so late, attempted, quite unsuccessfully, to love all of our relatives, and in general, grossly overestimated our powers. Once again, as in previous years, we have seen the actual vision and failed to do more than entertain it as an agreeable possibility. But for the time being, here we all are, back in the moderate Aristotelian city of Darning and the 815, where Euclid's geometry and Newton's mechanics would account for our experience, and the kitchen table exists because I scrub it. It seems to have shrunk during the holidays. The streets are much narrower than we remembered. We had forgotten the office was as depressing as this. In the meantime, there are bills to be paid, machines to keep and repair, irregular verbs to learn, the time being to redeem from insignificance. The happy morning is over, the night of agony still to come. The time is noon. And for the time being, this morning we have considered the past as it relates to forgiveness of ourselves, and the future as it relates to our gathering moral courage to make decisions that lie ahead. But of the present, what? W. H. Auden said, "In the meantime, there are bills to be paid, machines to keep and repair, irregular verbs to learn, the time being to redeem from insignificance." At the end of a list of chores, mundane tasks that occupy our bodies, if not our minds, he says, "The time being to redeem from insignificance." A clue to what this might mean is in the poem by Robert Frost. The poet says that there are some tasks that need to be done, rather mundane ones at that. "I'm going out to clean the pasture spring. I'm going out to fetch the little calf that's standing by the mother." What redeems these tasks from insignificance is that last line in each part, "I shan't be gone long. You come too." That "you come too" changes everything. The poet could easily do these chores alone, but then they would be insignificant or even trivial. How much more satisfying it is to share them with a loved one or loved ones, to make it a communal effort instead of a solitary effort. What could have been an act of mundane triviality becomes an act of love, of establishing community. It could even be an act of redemption, of redeeming, of seeking another from the midst of one's own solitude, of touching the solitude of another. This is, I think, an example of redeeming the time being from insignificance. Love redeems our lives by making the time being time for being. Time in which we can engage being authentically and freely. Love of this sort that is spread to those whom we will never know and who will never know us is called justice. And the love that is justice enables those others to be full and authentic and free creatures too. So now, what I would wish for us in this new year is this: forgiveness of ourselves and release from past regrets. Moral courage for taking on difficult choices. And love that enables us to redeem our time being from insignificance. Love that binds up our fragmentary lives and ennobles our trivial pursuits. Love that sets us free and at the same time will not let us go. So may it be. Let these be our parting words. Go forth into the world in peace. Be of good courage. Hold fast that which is good. Render to no one evil for evil. Strengthen the faint-hearted. Support the weak. Help the afflicted. Love all beings. Serve the Most High, rejoicing in the power of the Spirit. Alleluia. Amen. Blessed be.